Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello there. Welcome to Hardcore Listing with my amazing co-host over there, Stuart Whiffin.
What's up?
And me, just the very average.
At best.
For a god, Chris Glasson. It's clever, eh? This week's episode is with a bit of a legend.
Yep. A really good egg.
It is a good egg. Mm-hmm. And his topic somewhat covers good eggs, or food in general.
See what you've done there.
Eddie Temple Morris.
Yes.
Who has DJed for us in the past.
A few times.
Still holds almost a crown in my eyes as doing an unbeatable DJ set there.
So. We do discuss this in the duration of this podcast. We talk all sorts of things aside from his top five. We go in quite quickly and things get quite dark quite quickly on this one.
Mm.
And I think the podcast is obviously all the better for that discussion.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Eddie's a staunch supporter and patron of
calm.
Calm.
Mm-hmm. And mental health in general.
And talking about, you know, when we feel bad and when we feel low. So, yeah, this is a cracking podcast. Eddie's just, I'm sure most of you guys have listened to Eddie on Scroobs, and you know, aside from the fact that he's a pal, and he's come and done loads of some incredible DJ sets for us, it was that moment that we listened to him on Pips. It was like, we've got to get this, we've got to get Eddie on, because we've been trying for ages, and we got it over the line. Thanks to the Queen of Hoxton who let us record there.
Indeed.
And yeah, I know you guys are going to love this one.
Yeah, shout out to Love Beer and Bang Boom Creative.
Yeah,
to 76, our producer, and Brad Acton, our good guy, Camera Gimp.
Yes.
One last thing, you may well need a little snack by your side while Eddie starts describing these, his top five.
If you do like radio DJs, have a little look for our back catalogue, because we have done podcast with, some might not be out yet, I'm not too sure if they are or not, but
go through our back catalogue of unreleased.
Well, no, have a little look, because most of them are going to be out by the time Eddie's comes out. Colin Murray, John Kennedy,
Huey Morgan,
Rowena Alice,
Scroobius Pitt, but you all know him.
There's plenty of good stuff in the back catalogue, so go and have a little look back. But in the meantime, all I can say is Eddie, steady, go.
I like that.
It's a drunken soiree in the Within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
And we're recording.
We are recording.
We are going.
So we are not at the Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen where we normally record, and we are not in my back garden, which is the base of where we go stuff. So
the Whiffin. We're recording in a skip.
we're at the sister venue of Hoxton Square. They've let us use the Queen of Hoxton tonight, which is a place of many memories for us.
Yes, definitely. In the basement.
Yeah, absolutely. That you made that sound sexy.
it's not. I'm waiting to be fritzled any moment.
it's not for sex people, I assure you. done many a DJ set down here, which is a nice simple tenuous link to our wonderful guest today.
Yes.
Shall we just dive straight in?
Do it.
Our guest today is Eddie Temple Morris.
What an utter delight to be here with you on Hardcore Listening. Thanks, I remember mate. When Stu first mooted the idea to me at your legendary night with Pip at the book club. And I thought it was a great idea then, and I think it's an even better idea now that you've achieved number two in the in the comedy podcast on iTunes. Congratulations,
thank you.
Gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It seems a lifetime away now, doesn't it?
Yeah, a year with you is a long time to be sat in a room.
You've done how many of these now?
Oh, well, we just
aside
today
from
we
the
released
Patreon ones.
Yeah, we released episode 62 Monday. Yeah.
Christ.
Yeah, lot in a year. Yeah, and then the Patreon ones. So we do an extra one each week for people who like to pay to be abused, really, because we tend to take, you know, a lot of Patreon membership things, they probably put out shout-outs, Eddie, and say thank you for subscribing and stuff like that. We generally just pick a name each week to insult, don't we?
Them, so.
A lot of podcasting.
Yeah, you're within sniffing distance of 100 now. You're going to start planning the party.
Jeez, hell yeah. I like the sound of that.
So, I've probably known you quite a few years now, Eddie.
Through our mutual friend,
Scroobius. Our podfather.
The podfather.
Recently found out, though. And he was, up until recently, the only podcast that I'd ever done.
Wow. And an impressive one it was as well, mate.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot, because that was my heart and soul.
It really was
on there. Mm. And so, I still get people approaching me on various social media platforms, going, "Thank you for coming out and being."
You put it out on that one,
mate. Yeah. Well, I was very proud to be the first of his guests that really came out with the mental health thing, and I know that it's helped people, because so many people have got in touch with me and told me that, and that's that makes even one of those makes all of that, because I guess it's quite a brave thing to do, to sort of to admit that you're weak and fallible and breakable and all that sort of stuff, but it makes it all worthwhile, when
I've heard that there are people like that, but I've not experienced it, Eddie, myself.
But do you think attitudes towards it are slowly changing?
Oh, absolutely. Really. I mean, really. Like, I've been involved in that particular arena for 10 years.
And you do work with the charity?
With CALM, the Campaign CALM, Against Living Miserably. So I'm honoured to be the chair of their music board, and I've been one of their key kind of awareness raisers and fundraisers. And it's more about the awareness, really. And helping to get people like Stephen Manderson, Professor Green involved, and others, and it absolutely, it really is changing. I can see it. I mean, when I was approached by Jane, who the amazing woman, ex Greenham Common woman that started CALM at the beginning, she was, I think, earning 6,000 quid a year, and she was about to fold the whole thing up, because it just wasn't, she couldn't even afford to put a second class stamp on an envelope and send it up to the police in Liverpool, who were tearing their hair out because so many young kids were just dropping like flies to suicide.
Yeah.
And she said, Eddie, I really, really need your help. I need help with people like you. And so I helped, and then I got people much, much, much bigger. And with a much bigger kind of media footprint than me to get involved, and that's what's really sort of helped to spread it. And of course, and Pip, Pip giving me the platform to do that, and allowing me to do that, and encouraging me to do that. Bless him, because he's always been so mental health aware, hasn't he, Pip?
Yeah, his mum's a Samaritan.
Right, there you go. And his lyrics are very heart on their sleeve, and he's fearless.
Yeah,
pretty
as
miserable.
You know. So
he's
allowing me to do that. Then it just opened the door. Little old me did it, and then a lot of much bigger, much more famous people did it. Gail Porter, and then was it Rajesh? Who's that amazing?
Romesh.
Yeah,
amazing comedian, and many more besides. Mm. And it warms my heart that there's a whole mental health section of that podcast, and of the book that came as a result of the podcast. So it's one of the best things I've ever done.
Excellent.
Oh man, that's so cool. And long may CALM continue as well to do the work that it's doing, and increasing the mental health awareness as
well. Thank you. Well, they're doing great now. When I met them, they were having a £6,000 a year, and now they're having £1 million a year, I think.
Okay.
And because they've got, the royal family are involved now. They're part of they're part of the Heads Together campaign that Wills and Harry got together, with huge support that they garnered and that they get from you know, whenever they give an endorsement to anything, the press all kind of pounce on it. So, and people like Pro Green and big support people, other people who've been really helpful, Elliot example, and other you know, mutual mates who've all been incredibly supportive, and it all helps. It's all grist to the mill.
Yeah, but it's definitely changing in regards to, you know, people like Professor Green is a brilliant example for someone that is known as an urban hip hop act, whatever you want to call it, to come out and go, yes, you know, I have my struggles, and to put it out there and be completely heart on sleeve is fantastic. Do you know what I mean? That will speak directly to, you know, a lot of younger people that, you know, might be seriously struggling.
Yeah, and the key thing with that is that when you compare, if you don't talk about numbers, you just compare audience profiles, like my audience and Pro's audience. So my audience are generally thinkers. You know, they'd be probably Guardian reading thinkers. Do you know what I mean? And people who would be fairly aware. But a lot of Pro's audience would be the audience that we at Calm find it very hard to reach.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about maybe impoverished or struggling kind of on the lower kind of social end of the spectrum, that feel disenfranchised by the government, that feel out of the loop and disengaged with politics and with social mobility or anything like that. The kind of people who would go out on the rob, the kind of people who probably have mugged someone in the past or nicked a phone or whatever. Like these are, and these kind of people, they are really susceptible to mental health problems, because a lot of them come from a background where you just cannot talk about it. You know, in my family and my friends, we talk about it. Mm. But when you come from, you know, you might come from, like, I don't know, like from a family of Irish builders, or from a family of, like, I don't know, like an Afro-Caribbean family. And in those kind of cultures, you don't talk about this shit. Like,
you're seen as a sign of weakness, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, you just would be, you know, like, it would just be completely unnatural, and you would be almost sort of excommunicated from your family for even addressing those kind of things. So, I mean, huge respect to Pro and anybody that has the engagement of those people, because it's really hard to get through to them, and we really need to. We really need to. We could make a serious dent in the suicide figures if we could just get through to those guys. You know, they are the ones who need it the most. You know, it's like, it's those guys. And what was it? We had incredibly interesting figures January of last year about suicide versus jobs. And you'd think, well, you know, maybe it's musicians or artists. It's not. It's brickies. It's hod carriers. It's like low-skilled building workers that are the absolute number one for suicide. I mean, are you surprised by that?
It's interesting to know that it's guys that are in, you know, what, brickies, full-time employment and stuff like that? Or
but things like that, for me, my day job is construction, and I've worked on building sites for years, on and off, and that man up culture still exists there, you know. It's rife, you know, and it is weird, because even when you go on sites now, you know, there's things talking about well-being and, you know, mental well-being, and it's filtering through, but there's still that awful word, man up. That man up culture is still there.
Yeah, the stiff upper lip thing. Yeah, I absolutely see it, and the figures bear it out. Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is look. You know, it is by far. I'm not talking about, like, high-skilled sparkies and high-skilled, like, cabinet makers. I know those guys. You know, it's the lower end of that building site spectrum are dropping like flies, and it's a real problem. It's a real problem. And actually, while we're on this subject, there is something that I want to get out there, which is obviously I've been involved in Calm for 10 years, but there's a fact which I discovered while we discovered this fact about, you know, the building site guys were the number one, was this horrific fact that we knew that musicians were high risk. I know that I'm high risk, that my mates through musicians are high risk. It's obvious.
Why is that obvious? Like the creative kind of... Is it because the creative people are more comfortable to talk about it and put their feelings out there, if you're a songwriter, if you're a
actor or whatever?
I think there's so many variables. I think, again, because artists are thinkers, you know, you think about the stuff more and that can sort of lead to it. Also, the soaring highs compared to the crashing lows mm-hmm. that you get in a career in music, it's like an old-fashioned roller coaster.
Yeah.
And also nobody, the system doesn't teach you how to fail, only teaches you how to succeed.
Yeah.
And plus there are alcohol issues that are, you know, as you know, legendary in music, as are drug issues.
Yeah.
So all of those things can create very easy perfect storms. But the thing that I'm going to tell you is you'll find shocking, I think, which is that you guys probably know that we three are five times more likely to kill ourselves than our sisters, girlfriends, mums, wives, or whatever, mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact that we're men. Like we know that and we appreciate that. But in music, that almost inverts. And this is a fact. A female musician is three times more likely to kill herself than a male musician.
Whoa.
And that is something that the UK music industry should feel ashamed about. Mm. And that opens up a whole new conversation about self-worth.
Yeah.
And about sexism and about patriarchy and misogyny.
Wow.
But that's blown your mind, Chris,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought it would invert that much.
Yeah. I mean, if that was Jon Snow on election night with a pendulum swingometer, he would be having a fit over that. It's an analogy, but I'm introducing levity to something that's very, very, very serious.
Of course.
And I know lots of female musicians, and I know that some of them have had a really hard time, and we've sort of touched on it. And this is a note to self to call a couple of them and talk to them more, because obviously that's really important. Talking, communication is the key to all this.
Is that is a lot of funding for Calm to support that, to ensure that people who have the need to talk to someone have got access to that?
Well, that's an interesting word you've used there, funding. Calm doesn't get any funding.
Oh, okay.
We get nothing from the NHS. We get nothing from the government. We get absolutely nothing. The only thing that we get is from people like you or me or you know, people who are listening to this who are kind enough to donate something.
Yeah.
And from a few corporations, it's usually, almost in every case, the people who get involved in Calm are the people who are touched by the cold hand of suicide. So I'm involved because my mate killed himself. And you know, you'll be aware of it because probably one of your mates killed themselves, and it spurs you to get involved. It spurs you to give time or money or expertise or whatever it is. So it's always the people that have been affected by it directly who get involved.
Okay. Well, people want to find out more about Calm. What's the web address?
It's thecalmzone.net. Thecalmzone.net.
Okay.
And that's obviously there 24 hours a day. We've got a free and confidential phone line, which is open for most. It's now open 365, but it's not open for 24 hours a day. It's really expensive to do that.
Yeah.
And we still don't have the funds to do that. But but hopefully it'll happen. It's just I want that line to be available in those hours, in those special hours where you know, those hours where I thought about really hard about ending things. You know, those hours when between 4 and 6 a.m. when all of my insomniac buddies had gone to bed, had gone to sleep, or you know, passed out, and I was left on my own, and all I had then was Gary Newman's wife Gemma, who was in LA, who sweetly gave me her number, and she was like about 8 o'clock at night at that time, so she literally saved my life with that number that she gave me.
Wow,
fantastic stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, that all being said, Eddie,
yeah, let's lighten things up.
All that talk of suicide has made me quite hungry.
What a segue. That was just...
If we're going to use an audio clip, that's the worst one.
Poetry, that one.
Well, look, before you say what you've
chosen for your top five. Did you consider any other fives, mate, before you went for that one?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, you came to me and my first thing was, oh, well, you know, could it be top five albums or top five album covers or top five producers or top five studios
Why have we never done top five producers?
Yeah, top five guitars. I mean, top five producers would be amazing, wouldn't it? Mm. I mean, I'm thinking about that now.
Well, throw a few quickly.
Well, the greatest producer in the world ever for me is Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
I think he's absolutely incredible. Yep. He would be at number one, and he's now making the best soundtrack music that, in my view, has ever been made. You know?
And he's over here soon, right?
Because Robert Smith has got him to do the Meltdown.
Serious fucking bands playing that, mate.
It's the greatest lineup ever.
Do you know what? I picked up Crack magazine the other day when I was up here, and literally every page is all these festivals across Europe and all the ones over here. And then it was just a picture of Bob Smith and just a list of all my favourite bands.
Yeah.
And I just thought, do you know what? That's better than any other festival.
Yeah, it is absolutely the best. It's for me, and by the sound of things, for you as well.
Classic Chris.
Chris, tell your mum not to call you at work. So yeah, it's the greatest lineup ever, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Deftones and Mogwai and Nine Inch Nails and you know it's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty mega, and I've never seen Deftones.
Oh wow, yes I have at V98, I think it was.
No, I was there.
Oh, it might have been Reading. Oh, sorry, one of those. It was in 98. Yeah, it was in 98. Maybe it was Reading. Yes, right. There you go.
Yeah.
That's it. That's right. It was. It was Reading in 98. Or 99,
I was quite pissed in Chelmsford that year, but I'm sure I would have seen the Deftones.
Yes, no, it was Reading.
I'm taking you watch the Defiant ones then, because Reznor gets a bit of a shout out in that. Have you seen that series on Netflix?
Oh no, I haven't. Yes, but I've heard.
Oh, Eddie, you love it. It's worth a watch.
No, I can't wait to get stuck in. Yeah, I'm obsessing over Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the moment.
It's
I'm
great.
Watching it all. I'm watching it all for the fourth time. I've seen every episode maybe four or five times.
I love Andy Samberg.
And it's just one of the best. I think it's the best writing on telly. It's right up there with the greatest things ever written on telly, like with Father Ted and Cheers and Frasier and all and 30 Rock and those ones that are just where the writers are the stars. You know, it's just incredible.
Cool.
So I could have picked top five wines as well, because I'm a massive vinophile. Love my wine.
Okay.
And that could have, you know, if we do a drunk cast, maybe we could bring that live.
Yeah, we could drag that in here. If you could bring a few bottles and
I could talk about Blue Nun for about 20 minutes.
You know me to be a passionate guy. And as you know, I'm very passionate about mental health and I'm an advocate in that. And I'm very passionate about music. That's where I made my career. But if I wasn't a musician and a producer and a DJ, I would be a chef if I wasn't so afraid of a hard day's work.
That is a hard day's work, buddy.
It really is. I know so many chefs, and I know that their wives and girlfriends are widows, essentially, to that incredible and noble profession. I've always been a foodie. I've always, people who come around for dinner or lunch at mine tell me I'm a good cook. I would never say that for myself. I would let other people, you know, appraise my skills.
In many ways, you have, though.
I've always been really into ingredients, really into food. It's the thing that I love the most, apart from music. And it's the thing that I know about the most, apart from music.
About maybe a year or 2 years ago, you used to post some decent pictures of what you was concocting.
Oh, I still do that. And it's really nice to... It's really nice to inspire others. Like I got really into baking, not baking in a cake way, bread. Yeah. I got really into sourdough bread, and I've been through Facebook and Instagram, been encouraging people to do that. I think it's really therapeutic. I think it's really actually really good for your mental health, baking bread, giving birth to something that is alive. You know, it's a wonderful thing.
It's bread crazy. That Pip's brother makes.
Pip's bro, put it this way: when Pip's brother goes away on holiday. Pip's mum, who we all love, she has to go and
feed his gerbil.
Feed feed the bacteria that he's cultivating to create the dough for his bread. And that's that's at like 4 a.m. They need feeding. So like it has to be like at that hour. And like poor Jenny's got to go there and sort of like make sure this bacteria doesn't die.
It's incredibly resilient. I've heard stories of that thing that you're feeding is called a mother. It's called a sourdough mother.
Okay.
And it's just like you're the mother feeding the mother. There's something quite poetic about that. But I've heard stories about mothers being left for 2 years and then reviving. So life will find a way.
Okay.
And I you know, I've left mine for weeks and then just start feeding it, and it just, you know, it just always springs to life.
So do you think Ian's having Jenny on then all this time? That there's no reason for
it. I like to think this is a Samaritan here. She's like, look, sorry, I've got to go, I've got feed Ian's bacteria.
Yeah. Well, if you're making bread in an industrial way, then obviously you've got to, you know, you've got to feed it regularly. Yeah. Or if you're, you know, if you're making a loaf a day, then if you don't feed it, then you're not going to have enough mother there to make your sourdough. But, you know, somebody like me who just makes a loaf a week or a loaf every couple of weeks, just you can feed it once a week and you're absolutely fine.
Amazing.
So your top five this evening, Eddie, is going to be?
It's going to be, well, I wanted to do top five, and I'm going to use the word meals, but by osmosis, I now don't like that word because an ex-girlfriend of mine, who actually features in one of these, I'm not going to even say it again. She really hates that word, and it's kind of become infectious. And now I don't really like it either, and so I try not to use it. So I wanted to do top five meals, but without saying meals, which I just said twice again. Sorry, Sarah, if you're listening. So I can't say top five dinners because one or two of them are lunches, and I can't say top five lunches because some of them are dinners. So top five things that I put in my mouth at any given time of the day.
I mean, we can make it the title of this as well.
It's a catchy title. So I guess it's top. It is top five meals, but you know, I'm now saying that gratuitously.
So are they from five to one, as in one being the best, or are they just five that you equally rate?
Well, it'd be really hard to rate them. But if I have to,
you don't have to, mate. It's your top five.
We can talk about them, and then maybe I can rate them at the end.
Okay,
or maybe
sure.
You can rate them at the end.
Okay.
But I think we should start with pizza.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, I'm here with the lads, and you know, pizza is a much loved thing. Okay. I bet. I mean, do you have a mental list of the best pizzas that you've ever had in your life?
I can give you some. Quite quickly, I can tell you if you was to say what's my number one, I can give you that.
Yeah, go on.
Right,
give me your top.
So there's a pizza place in Hackney Wick, and I can't remember the name because I've been there for probably about 2 years now.
Yeah,
and it used to do this ground spiced lamb, minced lamb pizza.
Yeah,
on sourdough, and it would just, if I went there and they didn't have it, it ruined my night.
Yeah.
Because it was that good. Yeah. It was absolutely just the best. And I didn't even ever have to think about the fact what I was going to order when I was there. It was perfect in terms. It wasn't overly complicated. There wasn't loads of ingredients on there. Well executed.
Mm.
And I didn't eat it and then come away feeling like I was pregnant, or, you know, that I'd consumed something overly, you know, grease-induced and awful for you. So, yeah, that would be my number one. How about you, Stu? Is there anyone?
I did leave it feeling really bloated and was quite happy about it. I recently went to Scotland.
Yeah.
And we done this little thing a couple of months ago, didn't we? And Gail Porter came along and done it.
Mm.
And we was chatting. Obviously, she was saying, all these places I need to go when I'm in Scotland. And she went, when you're in Edinburgh, go to this restaurant. Tell him I sent you, because we was having this conversation. You're a vegetarian?
No, not at all.
You're not?
No, okay. I'm rampant omnivore.
Right, fantastic. I love haggis. And
that's an acquired taste.
Oh, I love it. And she went, go here and have a haggis pizza. And I was like, right, I'm doing that. And so a couple of weeks ago, I went to Edinburgh, went to this restaurant, and I said, right, I've been sent here to try the haggis pizza. Oh, fuck me, it was incredible. And I'm not a massive pizza fan. My missus and kids, if it's like, we're going to get a takeaway, they're like, can we have pizza? And they're all over it. But for me, it's not up there. It wouldn't make my top five takeaways. But a good pizza is a good pizza.
Yeah.
But yeah, haggis, that was mine.
No, mate, I would love to try that. I really would. Mm.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, I've exhaustively researched this. You know, I went when I was in New York. I went to the best pizza in New York, and it wasn't the best pizza.
Oh,
you know, the thing I love about pizza is it's so unpredictable. Unless you really make it a science, like Food du Rays, who are just down the road from here.
Oh,
yeah. That's incidentally my number two. I think that's the best pizza in the UK.
It's cracking. I've had some weird experiences in that pizza place.
The only time I've ever eaten the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Well, lunch, dinner, and 6 a.m. coming back.
Yeah.
Was Voodoo Ray's at Glastonbury, where I discovered, and they said that it's a hack. It's the Eddie Temple Morris signature slice from Voodoo Ray's.
Oh.
And it is, and the chefs there said it's a hack, and it's the Queen Vegan from Voodoo Ray's with extra pecorino, because they put all their best ingredients on that vegan pizza. It's got those amazing fat green olives and aubergine and artichokes. Really, you know, primo ingredients.
Pecorino
is a type of cheese that comes from Sardinia. It's a salty version of Parmesan. You know, Parmesan's kind of got a sweetness to it. And pecorino is a bit more salty and a bit more kind of powdery. And it's really good. And it's not as bad for you as a lot of cheeses. So, basically that the Queen Vegan pizza from Voodoo Ray's with extra Parmesan or pecorino is a hack, and it is absolutely to die for. And other notable ones that I've had in my life were, like I say, New York. The best pizza in New York wasn't the best pizza. It was a pizza I got from a corner shop in the Stuyvesant district of New York, which is remarkable for being, I think, the only bendy street in New York. There's a kind of an oval-shaped street, because everything else is perpendicular. Mm. And it was like late at night. I was there to go to the DMC World Mixing Championships, to go and see some incredible, see Dexter and see Craze, DJ Craze win it, as he always used to do in those days. And I went into this literal just corner shop, you know, and they had pizza there in this glass box already made, and one of them was a white pizza. It was a garlic pizza that didn't have any tomato on it, and I had a slice of that and a slice of just normal pizza, and it was so much better than the best pizza in New York. It was absolutely mind-blowing. See, for me, a pizza, because it's such a subjective thing, and people like different things. Some people like thick ones, some people like thin ones, some people like crispy or floppy. For me, the perfect pizza has to be erectile. You have to be able to pick it up from the edge, and it is erectile. It only flops maybe half an inch in the middle.
There's a bit of room for play.
Yeah, a little bit of play.
But you can get that in your mouth unassisted.
Yeah. So if you lift it up by the edge and it just like flops, and then all the toppings just slide off it, that's the worst for me.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the worst. It's got to be, and you've got, when you bite into it, it's got to have that crunch that you can hear from like 10 paces away.
I'm with you on that, mate.
And so these guys absolutely rocked it in that corner shop. And then one more big up I want to send is to the guy, I can't remember his name, his nickname is Mavado, and he's an ex drug dealer who ended up working in a kitchen. Kitchens are full of drug addicts. And I like read Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain. It's one of the best books ever written about kitchens. It's the, you know, working in a kitchen, it's the only job that anywhere in the world, it's the only job that you can get with no qualifications. All you have to do is just turn up and go, can I wash the dishes?
Exactly.
And, you know, that's
straight
it.
On pot
you're
wash.
You're in.
And you can work your way. I watch it when I worked in a restaurant. You can watch people start on pot and work all their way right up to from
up
into
to head
the
chef.
Salads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go fantastic. Through all the sections, become a yeah. line chef, and then end up sous chef yeah. and then head chef or yeah. whatever. And you started washing pots, and respect to all of those
yeah,
guys
for sure.
that know how the kitchen works from the back. That's fantastic. But so Movado was dealing drugs, and then he ended up working in a kitchen, sort of going straight. And he just made the most incredible pizza. Recipe given to him by an English lady called Sharon. And I went back there in a pilgrimage to go and have that pizza. And Movado had gone and Sharon was cooking. Same recipe, and it was dreadful. It was the worst pizza I've ever had. And here's the interesting thing. Same recipe, but there's the thing. You can put the same ingredients, but if you don't put the love into it, it's not. You're going to have a completely different result. And it was absolutely terrible.
Movado hadn't put ecstasy in it. No,
yeah, not yeah. at all. And actually, I saw Movado. I think his name's Wade, actually. Wade, sorry if you're listening to this. But he's amazing. He'd gone back to growing weed up in the jungle because he's made far more money. But I wish he'd stayed in the kitchen because he's obviously got some kind of magic to him.
Definitely. But there is a sort of like that creative cultivating thing, I think, between like sort of growing weed or indeed like your application in the kitchen. So if you really care about what you're doing, I've known people maybe that are great at growing weed and they take it to some sort of insane art form, really, and they love it. They absolutely die with a passion. And I imagine it's very much the same with cooking, you know.
Yeah.
You can use absolutely. The same ingredients, but there's so many variables, and one of them is, well, your commitment to what you're about to you're about to produce.
You can taste the love in food. Mm. You really can. And this on this little beach in Tobago, you know, this guy who wasn't even a chef was making pizzas, and it was at that time the second best pizza in the world. But which brings me to the number one. Now, the number one, and this is worth a, and I'm going to go on a pilgrimage there because it's a bit of a journey. So you've heard of Malta, obviously. Have you ever heard of Gozo? Yeah.
It's
a little island off Malta, and Malta is, I think, the most densely populated place in Europe. And
really?
So the Maltese. Go. It's where they would go, like for a weekend to the country. Yeah. They just take a ferry to Gozo, nearby island, and it's really unspoiled there. It's unspoiled by everything. There's hardly any cars on there, and it's there's hardly any development. It's a nice unspoiled little island. And on there is a 13th century, not even a restaurant. It's just an oven. Well, it is, I guess, a restaurant takeaway, and it's a medieval oven from the days when nobody had ovens. Oh, there would be one oven in a village, the baker, and people would take their goods to bake to the baker, and then the baker would bake them. And that's and so a lot of society revolved around the baker, around the oven. And so this is a 13th century oven. You know, stuff is really old around Malta. It's they kind of founded Malta after the Crusades. Knights of St. John, who guarded the road to Damascus, were basically thanked for guarding the road for all the pilgrims by being given Malta. And that's how it started. You know, that's why it's got the Maltese cross. Mm-hmm. And all that comes from the Templar Knights and the Hospitalier Knights. So, yeah, a lot of their history goes back. And the history of their pizza, of this oven, goes back to the medieval times. And they have somehow, I don't know, they've just... Oh, I tell you how they... I don't know what their base is made from. I can tell you that, you know, there's a little bit of corn flour in Movado's one. I can tell you there's a little bit of polenta in Voodoo Ray's one, but I didn't ask... I don't speak Maltese, and I didn't ask them what it was, but it was magic. It was fully erectile, and it had... I love local and seasonal ingredients, so I went for the local sausage and the local cheese. I think it was like a ewe's milk sort of mountain cheese from sheep that were there. But here's the game changer. It had a layer of thinly sliced potatoes over the top of the pizza.
And then
garlic, herbs, olive oil. So you had... Maltese do double carbs really well. Their national dish is basically...
Chip butty.
That would be the national dish of the North. But no, imagine a penne bolognese in a pie. Yeah, I know. It sounds like I'm joking.
Sounds incredible.
Yeah, you're sold. So I think it's called a timpana. Any so Maltese
potatoes
people?
Were cooked how?
So I mean, you've got a pizza and then a thin layer of potatoes over the top of the pizza and then some garlic and herbs and olive oil over the top of that. Oh, so and then in the oven. So you've basically got a pizza with all of the things that you know and love about a pizza and an erectile bottom and a lovely crunch. And then you've got this kind of Dauphinoise potato.
I was going to say, that's how I'm visioning it.
Going on over the top. It's just one layer, one thin layer. So, you know, in an oven, in a pizza oven, which is, what, 500 degrees or something. It's like almost hot as the center of the sun. I might be exaggerating slightly there.
My mouth's warm.
We're only on number five.
So it was incredible. I took that pizza, and everybody on Malta, you know, when you go, I'm going to go to Gozo, they go to Marshock. Oh, yeah, by the way, this place is called Marshock. I don't know how to spell it, but phonetically, it's called Marshock. If you go to Malta, you have to go there. Otherwise, we can't be friends anymore.
Okay.
Okay, everybody that's listening to this, you just have to. It's seriously the best pizza in
Knight's
the world.
Knight's pizza is what I've basically got from this. And that just sounds bloody amazing, Eddie. And we're literally only on number five. And yeah, like you say, Stu, that Dauphinoise on the top of a pizza.
Yeah, it's a game changer. Oh. It's an absolute game changer. And I took that down to the beach, fair old walk, and a little bit of a drive, and then a walk down to the beach, and it was still erectile when I got that out of the box. And it was just... I mean, sometimes, you know, it's where you are, and obviously the salt in the air by the beach would have made it sort of taste a little bit more savoury. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's a beautiful summer's day and it's a beautiful beach. That would have helped. But honestly, I have really, really exhaustively gone through my... Every pizza that I've eaten kind of goes into a place in my mental sort of top 100. And that just went straight into number one.
You ever tried to recreate any of these indoors?
No. Well, see, I don't have a pizza oven. You know, you need to have a proper pizza oven to do that. Pip's got a baking stone.
Here's a joke. If we were talking about doing something, maybe, but Pip's got a pizza oven that I helped install. One day, Eddie.
A pizza cast.
Yeah, pizza cast.
Yeah, that needs to happen.
Be pretty cool.
Right, so look, before we go on to your next one, do you want to talk a little bit about your new podcast?
Can I just quickly ask about pizza? Just my last question on pizza. What shouldn't be on a pizza?
Well, in my view, pineapple.
Yeah, I concur with that. Completely concur with that.
I get it. Mm-hmm. And I have enjoyed a ham and pineapple pizza in LA in the late 80s.
Because you're a grown-up as well, and you won't just completely pick food.
It was the first time. You know, somebody else bought that pizza. They said, you know, Canadian bacon and pineapple. And this is a dude who was in Platoon. I wasn't going to argue with him. He was also the guy who lamped out Keanu Reeves in Point Break. I'm not going to argue with that guy. He ordered the pizza, and I kind of enjoyed it. But when I think about it, it is kind of wrong. And I know it's a huge divisive issue. And I almost fell out with Kate Lawler, my colleague at Virgin Radio, over this because she absolutely loves pineapple on a pizza. But you talk to any Italian, they'll go, it's so wrong. It's just so wrong.
I don't really get it. And also pepperoni, I can just about pass on that as well. I know that's controversial.
You don't like pepperoni on a pizza?
Take it or leave it. Put it that way. I'm not picking it off. I couldn't have a pepperoni pizza on its own.
Wow, you've obviously had poor pepperoni.
Maybe.
Me and Pip went and watched a stand-up thing last week, and he got a pizza before we went in, and just that little egg in the middle sometimes.
Oh, Fiorentina.
Mate.
The spinach and egg one. Yeah, that's a good breakfast pizza or a good brunch pizza. You know, and that is going to sag in the middle, but that's kind of acceptable in under those circumstances. Yeah. And every rule should have an exception.
Yeah.
You know, all rules should be broken.
So Pip likes an egg on a pizza, does he?
He put it away pretty sharply.
He looks like the kind of guy who'd have an egg on his pizza, to be honest with you.
Well, so you very kindly asked about this podcast. So I said that the first podcast and the last podcast that I ever did that wasn't my own was Pip's. And I never really did one. And I'm honoured to be asked to do yours. But in the meantime, good old Deezer, who are the French version of Spotify, have taken this podcast that I've done with an incredibly interesting colleague and friend, Nick Hawkes,
who's recently done Pip's podcast as well, right?
That's right. Yes, yeah. Yes. I think I yes, that's right.
Was that last week? I believe that was Pip's one yeah, that came out
I think
last
it was.
Week.
Yeah, I think it was. And it's delightful that Pip's done that. And as a you know, and because Nick is such a dance music legend. So the podcast
What's the story
that we do.
With Nick?
Well, so the story is that he manages Liam Howlett, and that's how I know Nick. You know, because I've toured so much with the Prodigy as a DJ. And I'm now, you know, very friendly with Liam and with all the boys and the crew. And when I tore up my contract and walked out of XFM, with greatest respect in the world to XFM, I didn't want to, obviously, I didn't want to be involved in the thing that it became.
Yep.
So I was the only one brave enough to tear my contract up. And I got a call from Nick the very next day. And he said, boys, I've told me to call you. And they sent their love and they went, you know, you're better off out of there. We've seen what's, a week later, they'd seen what it was, turning into. They'd seen that... that this new station had taken XFM's most hated celebrity of all time and made him their new figurehead, and obviously I found that really offensive. So did the Prodigy and a lot of other people. So he got in touch with me and he said, "I know what you should do next. You should do the like." He described this thing, and I said, "What you're describing is the Desert Island Discs of electronica." And he went, "Yeah, that's it." And we need to have, like, there needs to be an online resource that is free for kids of the future to understand and appreciate and hear all of the people that made the music that has completely changed the world. You know, that you talk about British ingenuity and engineering and in science and in chemistry and whatever. But dance music, that's right up there with penicillin and with all of those things. For me, it's right up there. It's absolutely a world-changing phenomenon. And some of the protagonists of it, the early protagonists, you know, they're getting old now. And we need to document them before they pop their clogs. And so that's what we're doing. And Deezer, bless them, have taken this on as a legacy project.
And so is it just you and Nick, or do you have guests on talking
there? So Nick basically said, I think you should do it, and I should help you produce it, because between us, we know everybody. And I thought about it, and I went, well, it's a really good idea, but I think the idea could be improved. I think it shouldn't be me. It should be you and me, because you were there getting your trainers dirty around 1988 to 1991 in and around the M25. At all those raves, that was your thing. I was just the guy who was like trying to get some sleep, going, "This is a racket. This is just a kick drum."
Yeah,
you know, yeah. I wasn't involved in any way. Mm-hmm. For me, like at that time, I didn't want to be involved. And it's only with the benefit of hindsight now that I know and love many of those records that are being played then. But at that time, it was just a racket to me. And so I thought. You know, Nick, you're a dance music legend. This is the man that set up XL Records, signed the Prodigy, you know, and as Essex Boys, that's, you know, he should be in the Hall of Fame Legendary. Right there for doing that. And so he thought about it and he went, that's really sweet of you to think about me as a presenter. I've never thought about myself as a presenter before, but I think you're right. And also I said, and you know this, a triangular conversation is much more interesting than a ping pong, you know, between two people. And the way that I saw it, I thought I could be an agent provocateur. I could be, you know, maybe a host because I've played this game before. But, you know, you're having you, Nick, and a legend from dance music and me as a more of an impartial observer that's gone into dance music from a completely different angle. That's, to me, that's an interesting dynamic. So we started and Chris who's at Deezer now, he was my boss at XFM, and he very sweetly, I'm gonna say this, I don't care, like I don't think anyone would mind. I think enough water's passed under the bridge to say this, but it was a gagging deal. Chris basically said, if you tell everyone why you've left. Then, because you know where all the bodies are buried, you've been here for 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, and if you tell people you're leaving because of Moyles and because of what we're doing, then you're going to sink us. So please, please don't say anything. And if you don't say anything publicly, then you can use the studios here for anything that you like, except for Six Music. He had a beef with Six, and so I took him up on that, and so I started doing Trailblazers with Nick, and we recorded almost every single one of those at Global Radio. But I didn't say anything publicly, and now, until nearly 2 years later, as soon as I joined Virgin, I got an email from somebody that I'd never met at one of Richard Park's Bully Boys, who said, sorry, you can't do this. Well, he didn't say sorry, just goes, you can't do this anymore. And completely denied the gagging deal thing, which, you know, I guess he had to do, but it absolutely was a gagging deal, and, you know, that's what it always was. And
it was really strange to see what happened to X. Like, because, correct me if I'm wrong, because we've got mutual friends, that Jim Benner being one of those.
Yeah.
And John.
John Kennedy, the absolute legend, yeah.
Who's been on, hasn't he? Top five Christmas singles.
Very unique ones.
But for me, do you mind me asking how old you are already?
Not at all. I'm an open book. I was born in 1965.
Right.
So I just had my 53rd birthday, I think.
Okay. So I'm 45, and I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, because did Robert Smith organise a gig to try and set up XFM?
Almost.
Was there something at Finsbury Park?
Well, it wasn't Robert Smith. It was Chris Parry, his manager.
Right.
So basically what happened, the formation of XFM, and I'm surprised John, approaches with John, because he was basically there when this was happening. It was The Cure's manager being exasperated that The Cure weren't getting enough airtime in his mind. And he's quite right, because they're one of the greatest things that's ever happened about the UK. And so he just thought, you know what? I'm going to just start a radio station for music like The Cure. Mm-hmm. Because he felt that, Radio 1 were kind of, putting The Cure as a heritage act and on the back burner the way that they do. And they were too cool to be on Radio 2, and there was no alternative station. So, he created the alternative, and it was a pirate. Mm. And then, as pirates often do, as was the story with Kiss and with Rinse, it became a legitimate thing, and the radio authority recognized it and gave them a license. And then Capital Radio, as it was then, bought the license, and I joined in the year 2000.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Because I went to Charlotte Street.
That's where it was.
It was over there. And that was when Ricky had just started. And I took him in my demo. And he put it on, and Ricky weren't famous then.
Yeah.
And I remember him putting it on, and I couldn't give it, at the time I couldn't give a shit what Rick said, and I was just like, but in the corner of my eye, I could see Gary Crowley's foot tapping, and I was thinking, Crowley's tapping his foot to me demo, that's it, I've made it, Crowley's on board.
Yes, oh my gosh, I was on his demo clash when he was
really?
On, yeah, the Gary Crowley demo clash, but that was pre-XFM.
Yeah,
That was when he was on Radio London, I think.
That's
it was.
Right. Yeah.
And my band were up against Suede,
who Ricky managed.
Is that right? Mm. Good God! Wow. Now they're managed by Dids from the Cooper Temple Clause. Small world. Yeah. So where were we?
Oh, we were just talking about the changes at X and stuff like that.
But gosh, I miss XFM, and I've never listened to Radio X. It's too heartbreaking. I've literally never listened. But I have lots of good friends there.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that run it, I love them. They're great guys, and I've got all the time in the world for them.
So did you? I'm not going to ask you about decisions as to why you moved away and whatnot. But. Could you see the change in mainstream indie and where it was going, and was it going more White Van Driver? You know, do you know what I'm saying? It was like,
these things are all, as you know, as a club promoter, you know that these things are all cyclical.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, your question is a better question for John Kennedy, really, because I'm more of a dance guy. But I've always been in that lovely grey area, what I see as a lovely grey area in between dance and rock, or between indie and dance, you know. And the bands that I really like are the ones that cross, that have a foot in each. But it's always cyclical, and you know, indie might be out. Well, I guess it's starting to come back in. Indie's been out for quite a while, but you know, you see bands like Blossoms and stuff coming, you know, becoming really successful now, and you know, Arcade Fire doing so well, and there's definitely a groundswell towards that. And, you know, things go out of fashion, and then the wheel turns slowly, and then what was incredibly uncool becomes incredibly cool 10 years later. Mm. So, you know, dance will fall out and will you know, be replaced by indie any time now, probably.
I've been waiting for that.
You've been waiting for that. You're teasing him there.
are you real indie kid?
Because even as promoters, we're always looking for that opportunity to go, right, come on then, let's get the new exciting place to go, the new culture, the new thing going that people can go to and get a buzz off. And
live music and
bands. And
people like me will always be there to push against that. Like, because when I DJ in a dance club, I like to ask questions of a crowd. You know, yes, I do play a lot of crowd pleasers and stuff, but I like to push a crowd as far. I like to find the boundaries. Yeah. I like to find, like, what I can get away with.
It's so, that balance of integrity and just giving them what they want as well. And just, it is a fine line.
Giving them their greens.
I like to push. Yeah. Like, when I'm playing in an indie place, I'll go as dancey as I can possibly go. Yeah. And when I'm playing in a dancey place, I will go as indie as I can possibly go. Yeah. Always. That's what I've always done. You know, I played an indie set at Creamfields. I mean, I helped start Ibiza Rocks, which was taking indie to an island of at that time, trance.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. Like, it was house and trance music then. Mostly trance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm proud to be the first person pretty much that played drum and bass on that island.
Yeah.
I remember playing, you know, Pendulum's first single in Privilege at Manumission, and Ibiza Rocks wasn't even an idea then, and I remember clearing the floor, but for it was like half the people there just went, what the fuck is this? I've got no idea what's happening here, but it's very uncomfortable, 174 BPM. I don't know how to dance to it. I don't know what's going on, and I'm freaking out. But then there was some other people who were doing Islamic kowtowing to me, like literally just going, we're not worthy, we're not worthy. Thank you so much for playing this. So it was, you know, it divides. It really divided. But that's what I mean. I'm always there. I'm always there to push against.
One of my memories that I have where I just thought, cool, that was a brave move, was Zayn come and DJ.
Oh yeah,
Lizards.
I remember this,
and it was at the time dubstep was really blowing up.
Yeah,
and it was lots of hip hop was being played.
Was that when it was in Essex?
No, that because you come to Southend and done Lizards, didn't you? But no,
we'll talk about the Southend gig.
That was one of my favourite gigs of all time.
It's still It's still in terms of the people we've had come play for us. I can't challenge that. No one's beaten you. In terms of a DJ set, mate,
that's amazing.
That is legendary, that
Thank
set.
You.
It really was. I'm not pulling your leg, mate. That was one of the best sets I've ever seen.
Oh, thank and you,
the,
man. That
and
means
I remember
a lot.
The drips, just dripping, the sweat dripping off the ceiling.
It was a summer. It was like an August or a July or August gig. And it was.
And you were bouncing like a madman behind there, mate. You were loving it.
Yeah, I fed off the crowd. And I went on a pilgrimage to that kebab shop after. what's it called?
I know the one you're talking about.
The kebab shop, there was this thing that went viral me and my lot with, I think it was like Flux Pavilion being played in a kebab shop in Essex.
That's
it was that. It was called Dino's, is it?
It's called.
I genuinely couldn't tell you.
I forget what it was called, but I went on a pilgrimage to that kebab shop. Because I love that clip. Before YouTube clips were even a thing, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of my favourite nights of my career, that one. You know,
excellent.
Like, and you know, that was for me more profound than playing in front of 60,000 people with The Prodigy and Jason Status and all of those guys at Warriors Dance.
Wow.
Sorry, guys, fantastic. But you know, that was my Essex Boys gig of the of my career.
Brilliant. Brilliant. But yeah, all this dubstep was being played. And I just remember Zane got on the mic and he just went, right, you guys think you're cool, yeah? And like, you want to have it, do you? And like, and I was thinking, right, well, we must have some serious tune here. And he kind of whipped them all up, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then he dropped, was it Ace of Spades, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he went fucking mental. And I just thought, whoa. And I just thought, that's a brave move. Playing the Ace of, which is a fucking banger. But I just thought, if I would have got the mic and gone, right, lads, let me just tell you what you need, it would have cleared the floor.
What would it have been?
Yeah, it would have been
the Smiths.
Probably would have been Territorial Pissings, I think.
Mate, well, that would be mine if I was going to do it. I bloody love that song. But I saw Zane do something similar. Like, first time I ever saw him was at a festival, and he started with Iron Man. And I was just like, that's a one hell of a song to fucking start a set with. To, again, a crowd that didn't look like they were really going to be digging metal or anything like that. Yeah, good
tune
work.
Tune you played that was the first time I'd heard it at SAFM was the, can't think who remixed it, the almost drum and bass version of When the Sun Goes Down by the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, it was a drum and bass mix by Fake ID. He was one of my mashup boys.
That was him.
Fake ID, or Lionel Vinyl, he started out as.
Yeah.
So he was just one of the mashup crew that I used to encourage to make tunes and send them in to me and you know, help to start a whole kind of generation of bedroom producers or people who used to make music when they were like young and then they'd had kids and they were dads and all that. And then they got into it. And of course, they had the knowledge and they had the reference points and the ear to be able to know what goes with what. Yeah. And it was a wonderful, wonderful time. Yeah, so he was one of them. And I still play it to this day.
Yeah, it's a banger. Right, we're getting sidetracked talking tunes, aren't we?
All this talk of mashup tunes is making me hungry.
We were always going to get sidetracked.
End of part one. And what a part that was.
Are you hungry?
I bet you are.
I'm starving after his first one.
Absolutely. What a cracking chat.
Thanks, Eddie, for coming on.
Real gentleman. I'm not going to say any more because part two will be out shortly. So
we'll catch you on the flip.
Exactly. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.